Good evening, everybody. This is Ryan, and I've got Brianna with me.
Hey.
And we are bringing you the very first episode of Paw Print Academy, the podcast where we talk about leadership in the home and how it relates to dog training. Specifically, when we talk about dog training, we cover things that are sit, down, stay, place, all of these commands, these things that we say to the dog and that we want to replicate and have the dog replicate over and over. But another way of looking at that that dog training, I guess, pattern, right, is to focus on what makes the dog want to do it in the first place. And it's not just because we have tasty snacks, but it's also because we build a relationship with the dog that creates the desire for the dog to want to do these things with you, right? Not just do them for you, but participate in a give and take relationship.
Yeah. Man's best friend.
Right. Absolutely. And so, today is the first episode here, and we're going to cover that. We'll go over some background and some why we're starting this and why I think it's important. But this podcast is going to be a little bit different in the fact that we have we are both dog trainers, right? We have our own clients, and we have those clients dial in through Zoom and be live on the call. And basically, this podcast, the goal is to record it in basically a live-like format. What we do with our clients is we have them dial in each week and we talk about these leadership subjects in the house and this different dynamic to dog training that's super, super important for home pet dogs. And I think it's important for any dog, but specifically we train pet dogs. We focus on in-home training for dogs. And we have our clients dial in and then we talk about those subjects and we give them opportunity to ask questions and learn from each other. And rather than just have guests on, which we fully intend to as we go on with this, but rather than just have guests on where everybody just talks about like their piece of the puzzle, the advantage is that we try to get other normal people with normal dogs involved in these discussions. And so the way that this will kind of look is we'll go through one main topic like each week, and we'll break that down usually into two or three like sub points with kind of supporting information. And we'll talk about those things within all of the trainers here for this podcast. Then we've got two projects that are kind of pre-written out that I think is important for all owners of dogs to kind of institute in their home. And then the follow-on to that is that we'll open it up for live question and answers. If you are tuning in and you're not a client of ours and you're tuning in later and you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts or on Podbean or something like that, you're absolutely able to type up some questions and send them, leave a comment, leave a like, whatever. No problem with that. We'll get to them the next week as we're able. So that's kind of the ground rules and the makeup of this and where we want it to go. All right, so our initial concept here, our overarching topic for today is the pack leader mindset, right? And why dogs thrive with structure. So I think there's an incredible amount of stress over what kind of dog trainer you are and what techniques you use or don't use and all of these things. And I'm going to try to just skip through most of those things. And we're going to talk about things that I think that we all can agree on. And that concept is that if you lack any degree of leadership in the home, your dog will step into that role for you. Mm-hmm. that I think is pretty universal. And there are certainly dogs that are not going to fit this mold exactly. Every dog, just like every human, is going to have a different level of desire to lead the pack or to just lead an interaction. It doesn't have to be all about pack. It doesn't have to be about pack this, pack that, pack drive, alpha male, this and that. It's more of just, even in an interaction where you ask a dog, hey, lay down or sit, or no, don't jump on the couch. Like, go to your nice big $120 bed that I bought you at PetSmart, right? That's like nicer than my bed. So there's plenty of things that we ask our dogs to do, but we're going to kind of focus in on, regardless of how you ask that and how you train that, the concept that I think everyone can benefit from is asking yourself, one, am I leading this interaction in a way that another animal would want to follow me? And like, am I doing it fairly?
Yeah.
Right. Rather than just, I will show you, and which I don't think is ever really appropriate. Mm-hmm. All right. So the core idea, right, is that dogs don't thrive in a democracy. Dogs do not thrive in an environment where every dog gets to have a vote and then everyone can disagree and then chaos ensues. Dogs, that's just not in their nature, right? They look for clarity. They look for boundaries and they crave leadership. And if they don't get that from us in this relationship, me and my dog, then a lot of times what we see as trainers in the home is that the dog will step right into that role. Mm-hmm. And at that point, now the dog, it's not about whether the dog is in charge all the time, but in that one moment where the dog jumps on the couch, mm-hmm. just as an example, the dog is controlling that interaction. And at that point, now the dog gets to make a decision, and the dog's decision is rarely what we would decide. And then that creates anxiety between us and the dog. Mm-hmm. And that's never what we want. So without leadership, without boundaries, our overarching point here is that without it, they make their own rules. And usually that's when that continues to spiral, that's suddenly when dog trainers get the phone call.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
All right. So leadership and how, so leadership creates safety, right? That's the, my main bullet point that I wrote down. And so let's kind of break this down. Dogs naturally follow structure because it reduces conflict and it reduces stress. When a dog doesn't understand the concept of whatever it is, it's not just, hey, I told you to sit. They might not understand the concept of not barking at the squirrel. They might not understand the concept of not jumping up to get closer to visitors when they come over. Mm-hmm. And when those visitors are children, it's not that the dog's trying to assault them. It's just that they don't understand the expectation. They don't understand the boundary.
Yeah.
And so how can we like be more clear with that, right? I'm going to jump a little bit ahead here because I want to hit a kind of a question, right? And I want this to kind of go back and forth. Today we've got Brianna here, which is one of our trainers, and then myself. So when we first have a dog, and we're trying to institute some of these controls and some of these leadership things. Brianna, I'm going to ask you, what is a leadership exercise that you can use or that you would give a client to use like right away that if they've got like an insecure or an anxious dog, something that they can use to show leadership in just a very like passive, relaxed way that can kind of improve that relationship right off the bat? And why do you think it works?
I think what I would initially go to in my thought process is threshold manners. I mean, we start with that day one with any dogs that come in anyways, because it's not a big conflict to have a dog. And what I mean by threshold manners is any kind of entryway, doorway, whether that be a crate door, whether that be your front door, your back door, your car door, any kind of door that we walk through with a dog is a threshold. And number one thing we typically see when we do an eval or see a dog just hanging out in the home is you let it out the back door, you just open the door, the dog runs out. You open the crate, the dog runs out. You open the front door, the dog runs out. And that's usually when people are like, whoa, whoa, whoa. But every other door, that dog has been allowed to just go as soon as the door opens. So what you see is a dog standing at the door and it's like staring at the crack. And it's like, open, 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 open. And that breeds anxiety in a dog. They need to know what's on the other side of that door. They have to get there first. They have to get there before you. And it's just such an exciting adventure usually for a dog. It's you take them out front to go for a car ride. You take them out front to go for a walk. You take them out back to play ball. You know, you let them out of the crate and you're letting them out of the crate. Everything in that instance is exciting. But what we have to do as dog trainers and responsible dog owners is we have to tone that level of excitement down. So when it comes to threshold manners and going in and out of doors and coming in and out of crates, I'm always looking for a sit. And if we're in a crate, I typically look for a down just because the lower they are to the ground, the more time you have to correct and get them back into that position. But waiting for that level of calm and asking for some obedience before they are allowed to go anywhere is something that's going to immediately help you and your dog from having so much anxiety around those spaces. You let a dog out the back door and everything's fine. But again, the front door is always where people are like, well, my dog just darts out the front door and then it's gone. Because who has a front yard fence? I don't know. But that's one of the things where if you have an anxious dog, they're making that decision. They're the ones going first.
You know where I always see front yard fences? When? On all of the old Caesar Milan videos.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I haven't watched those in so long, I don't remember them. Right. We don't live in those type of suburbs. We don't have front fence yards. And so that's where we always see, and we have a lot of apartments around here. People all the time are like, well, my dog, you know, they bust out the apartment door and there's a dog right there. Prime example of why your dog should not be going first. You should be able to open that door, check your surroundings before that dog is allowed to go through the door. Do you have to step through first? Do you have to be like, no, sit and walk all the way to your car before they come with you? No. But it's as simple as asking for that sit, being able to open the door without throwing all the things in your hands away to control your dog, and then going through the door with that dog to let them know that, hey, we're in a pack drive right now because dogs switch pack drives. It's prey drive, it's pack drive. There's all sorts of drives. And you need to be going through that doorway as a pack together, because if you're not, then the dog's not with you on that walk or on that car ride. They're in charge of that walk and in charge of that car ride, even if you're driving.
Yeah, absolutely. So like without a clear leader, right, the dog's going to feel pressure to make a decision because they're owning that leadership decision. And when they do that, 9 times out of 10, that decision is going to be something that either that dog was not suited for or that you're not going to agree with.
Yeah. It's like letting a toddler decide like what you're going to do for dinner. It's like, of course you're going to have chicken nuggets and mac and cheese.
Right. Right. Good old staples.
Yeah.
So, and when we talk, I think the threshold's a really good example, because when we talk about leadership, a lot of times people immediately resort to like thinking about harshness, right? Like you've got to lead from the front and you've got to show the dog who's boss and all of these things. And that's not what we're talking about at all. We're talking about the nonverbal communication that you can just show the dog that you are leading the interaction by just going first.
Yeah.
Now, granted, you have to incorporate some accountability into this, right?
Right.
Because you may not have a door that either both of you can fit through at the same time, or that might not even be healthy for the exact like situation. It 9 times out of 10, it's going to be you walking through the door first.
Right.
And then the dog following you.
Yeah.
That's all the communication that dog needs to know that you controlled that interaction.
Yeah. I mean, even if you don't say sit, when you get to that front door, give them some leash pressure or just stand there for a second, the dog's eventually going to look at you and go, what are we doing? Oh, okay. Well, I guess I'm going to sit down.
And so when we apply that to anxious dogs, right, a lot of times we'll see anxious dogs relax significantly as soon as you step up into that leadership role. When you show them clear, concise, like clear communication of what you're expecting and what you want to accomplish, there's a lot of resolved anxiety that just comes from somebody stepping up and making a decision. Mm-hmm. So that's really, really important when we're dealing with anxious dogs, especially. And we jumped a little bit ahead with the anxious dogs, but I felt that it was important in that situation. So now in multi-dog homes, right, clear leadership can also prevent fights from either removing competition away from rank, right? So now the dogs are not in this competition. Like, no, I am here in the pack and the other dog is, you know, arguing with them. No. Let me show you why I'm above you in the pack. Mm-hmm. Pack dynamics, which you don't see with one dog very often because you don't really have a pack. But as soon as you have two dogs and you have a human, you've got a pack. Three makes a pack. When you have three dogs, it gets even more complicated because what you can observe, you let them out in a yard and you've got three dogs running around. You can actually observe them kind of like making and breaking alliances, like on the fly, right? Dogs are very, very good at those pack dynamics. And they don't last forever because one dog could be super, super dominant 1 minute and then suddenly a real quick switch happens. And now that dog's submitting to this other dog that is now like driving this game, whatever it is.
Right. It's like kindergartners and they're like, you're my girlfriend. No, you're my girlfriend. No, you're my girlfriend. And they have 5 girlfriends that day and they get home and their parents are like, what?
Right. I don't even understand.
Yeah.
great analogy. all right. So dogs in a structured home, dogs will adapt in a structured home more calmly to new and chaotic environments. Imagine that dogs have, they've got up to 100% of their brain power. If 60% of it or 80% of it is taken up by them trying to process what is expected of them so that they don't get in trouble, they've only got a little bit of brain power left mm-hmm. to process all the other things that are going on. And then you put on them the pressure of like leading and making a decision. And then you're like super confused why that dog made a crazy wazoo decision and ran in the other room, grabbed a sock and tore it up.
Yeah. Yep.
So how can a trainer tell when we talk about like a reactive dog, right? How can a trainer tell the difference between dogs' reactivity that comes from fear versus just a lack of leadership in the home? Like you on the kind of the behavioral side, do you have an answer for that one? Putting you on the spot.
Right. That one is putting me on the spot.
Right. It's kind of a hard question too.
It is.
Because now we're looking at like 2 levels deep.
Right.
Because you're not just observing the dog's behavior, but we're talking about a reactive dog that is fearful and they can react aggressively due to fear.
Yeah.
But that can also be formulated and that can come from this basis of frustration mm-hmm. as well.
Yeah. I think we see that a lot when we do like walks with dogs and, you know, we'll get an owner that is like my dog's lunging and barking and doing all these things at this dog. And then we'll take the dog out and is not doing that. And it's not that the dog notices the difference, right? But it's the level at which you are leading that dog and being like, no, we're not doing this. And a lot of times, owners have a hard time telling their dogs no. And they have a hard time like shutting that down and correcting and doing things that tell the dog that it's doing it wrong. And if you don't tell the dog it's doing it wrong, then they think they're doing it right.
So I'm going to take a hard right here just for a second, mm-hmm. because it occurs to me that we're kind of mixing a couple of different things. So we have a client base that are obviously, I explained it at the beginning here, the client base that are kind of listening in live right now. And they've heard a lot of these things before. So we're kind of talking about these concepts that are, I guess, probably more understood than someone tuning in for the first time. So let's go back and forth real quick with mm-hmm. just a couple of examples of like, what are we talking about with leadership in the home? When you're talking about dogs, we're talking about leading the interactions, right? The first thing that comes to mind is that we recommend that you like either hand feed your dog or that you require something of your dog to earn their food. Mm-hmm. That can be as simple as sit. Good job. You sat down. Here's your food. Here's your bowl of food. Mm-hmm. It could be as complicated as doing multiple tricks or events or performing tasks, mm-hmm. right? And then getting their food. It could be as time intensive as you directly feeding from your hand, each handful from you to them, to their mouth. All of those things have one thing in common, which is you are controlling the food, and not in a mean way. You're giving the food to the dog, but you're just changing one small thing. Instead of you just scooping it out of the bag, if you're using a kibble or you're using a frozen raw diet or something like that that's commercially bought, doesn't matter. For the purposes of this podcast, we're not going to go down that rabbit hole. But you're putting food into a bowl and giving it to your dog. Mm-hmm. You just insert one additional step in there, which immediately raises your value in the mind of that dog, which is they have the food. I want the food. How do I get the food?
Yep.
And by them then doing something that you've asked them to do, you are immediately kind of like controlling that interaction. And when you control any interaction, that is that nonverbal leadership that we're talking about. Now, another example, picking up or introducing toys to your dog rather than letting your dog just pick through a menagerie of toys in a toy box.
Yeah, good word.
Nice. Mm-hmm. So the dog being able to have 24/7 access to a toy is not a bad thing, is not something that is going to ruin your dog. That's not what we're saying. But if you are in tune with your dog and you have all those toys put away and you come to your dog with a toy, you control that toy and now you're giving it to your dog. That's leadership. That is an example of leadership. It immediately increases your value in the eyes of the dog.
Yeah.
What's another one? Yep. Right on the spot. So you talked about thresholds.
Right.
Right. You going first on the thresholds.
Mm-hmm.
How about another one?
I think dogs on the furniture.
Okay.
This is going to be one that's hated.
Right. So, right. So dogs on the furniture. There's nothing inherently wrong with dogs getting on the furniture, but you inviting your dog up on the furniture.
Right. Yeah.
That's leadership.
That's where it comes in. Yeah.
Right. Because you're inviting them.
Mm-hmm.
So when we're talking about that's probably one of the best examples, because now if you understand that example, you can apply it to all the other things. You should be inviting your dog and asking your dog to partake in all of these things. When you go for a walk and there's a place on the walk where you know that there are squirrels around. My dog goes crazy for squirrels, loves squirrels. Mm-hmm. if I know that there's a place where squirrels tend to hang out, then I'm going to go into those areas and then I'm going to give her a break, right? From being in a heel or being in a, or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. So then I give her a break there and invite her to go sniff around and see if she can find a squirrel.
Yeah.
That is the same thing that I would do anyway. Mm-hmm. But instead of me letting her lead the interaction by going and finding the squirrel, I'm inviting her to do it.
Yeah. Same thing with like pushy dogs that come over for pets and they like nudge your arm and get like under your armpit. It's cute until it's not. And you have a full drink in your hand or a plate of food or something. But inviting that dog over into your space for pets is different than that dog coming over and demanding pets.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I just wanted to kind of divert real quick and talk about that and make sure that we were discussing this in a way that like made sense to most people. When we talk about leadership in the home, these are the types of interactions that we're trying to discuss. Mm-hmm. All right. So major point. Let's finish our last question. Last question for the leadership creates safety point. What is the biggest aha moment for clients when they finally provide consistent leadership, and like, how do you anchor it for them?
I think big aha moments typically come like after when we introduce structured walks, right? We deal with a lot of dogs with reactivity and things like that, especially on walks. And we work through a lot of, you know, again, with like, I guess threshold isn't only doorways. It's the distance from which a dog will not react, right? So when we're dealing with reactivity and we're talking about thresholds, it's how close can we get without the dog reacting? And a lot of times we see that with, you know, dog on dog reactivity, where they're on a leash and they just bark at a dog as they go by. In that instance, when we get at a distance where we can work that dog through it and walk by the dog, even if it's at a greater distance, and watching the owners just be like, wow, like that was all it took, was an extra 10 feet over to the left for that dog to get enough distance to where it could control itself and understand that that dog wasn't close enough. And so there's no reason to react. You are also like, positioning is really important on those walks, being, you know, on the other side of the dog versus not. And those are things that are hard to think about when it just comes to, I just want to walk my dog. But when you go to walk your dog, every walk has to have a purpose. And it's not just to get out energy, because I'll be the first to tell you that a walk doesn't get out much for a dog. And I know a lot of people think, well, I'm just going to take my dog for a walk and they're going to get tired. But
I'm definitely going to take some heat for that one.
Right. But
it's like the traditional physical exercise for every dog. You right. have to walk your dog.
Right. But do you? I bet you if we played hide and go seek with like three bowls of food in the backyard, they'd be just as tired than if they walked a mile.
Right. But so would I.
Right. Me too. Because you're finding your food at that point. But I think really getting that solidified structured walk, or seeing the dog react and getting a correction for that reaction, the owner who's never given a correction before on a walk and just gets pulled and dragged through it is like, whoa, that they usually bark their heads off. They barked once, got a correction, and they're not barking. And it's not because the correction was so severe. It's because we said, no, correction, we're not doing that. And the dog is like, oh, all right, that's not allowed. It's just like telling a kid when you go out and they go to run across the street and you're like, nope, and you grab their hand and you're holding their hand. At that point, like, you're not allowed to do that.
Right. When you hold a child's hand and they try to run across the road and you don't let them.
Right. Chaos can ensue, correcting. Right?
They
can,
yeah. You're correcting them.
And they can start screaming and crying, but you're still not going to let that child run across the road.
Right. 100%. And Right. Just that verbal no can do wonders if it's communicated clearly and it's communicated in a way that the dog perceives and understands.
Right. The clarity is where the dog is like, clarity is
really important.
It's not the act of the correcting. It's the fact that you were like, no. And they're like, oh, okay. They said no.
All right. So we're going to segue into boundaries defined relationships. So every relationship in the pack, right, it's got rules. And the dog expects to know what they are. If they don't know what they are, that's when some of these weird things start happening. So dogs just need to know what to expect, and they need to understand where those boundaries are. Boundaries teach respect, and they prevent entitlement. Mm-hmm. Because behaviors such as jumping or barking for attention, when a dog takes personal space away from you, in order to like own that space themselves, right? That is an example of one of those entitlement behaviors. So jumping up on a guest comes in, that dog has no personal boundaries or no respect for those personal boundaries, and he jumps up to, it could be completely friendly. He just wants pets. But without that boundary, right, that just gives us, that is just an example of the entitlement behavior. Mm-hmm. Just so that we're on the same page here. So clear boundaries, they often unlock, I guess, like freedom, right? They clear boundaries will unlock freedom for the dog. And when they know what behaviors are allowed, they can work within those boundaries. And a lot of times you see a reduction in anxiety and you see an increase in the desire for your dog to be there around you and also like listen to you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really, really important. So owners who let their dogs figure it out often create confusion and conflict. So rules around thresholds and feeding and furniture, like usually will, they can establish by having those rules. Let me rephrase, right? So by having rules regarding the furniture, we can establish those clear lines of respect. So no, you can't jump on the furniture whenever you want. I invite you to jump on the furniture. Then it's appropriate. Mm-hmm. And removing boundaries, here's where clients typically will end up between a rock and a hard place, is when we remove those boundaries too early, we end up with an increase in, I guess, that me and the dog working against each other, right? So if I get a new puppy and I let him loose in the house, I can expect to have things chewed up or to end up cleaning up a pile of pee. That's because that would be natural for most people to check off in their head. They're like, well, yeah, of course, because he wasn't ready for that like level of freedom. Right. That's the whole point. Removing boundaries from your pet, even when they're housebroken, even when they're trained, even when they're all these things, but removing those boundaries too early, not too early based off of your definition, but too early for the dog's definition. When we remove them too early, it often causes setbacks in both our training progress and it causes stress between our relationship with the dog.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, Brianna, what's one boundary you've seen transform a household within a few days, and how did you implement it?
I think we'll go back to like the no furniture, because that's one of the really big ones that, you know, we have no problem with the dog being on the furniture, right? If your dog, we've said it a million times, if your dog has no behavioral problems and is an angel 99% of the time, then that dog can be on your couch. But if you haven't invited that dog, I don't expect the dog to be on the couch. That's me personally. Nala can get up on the couch. She never has. But if we invited her up on the couch, I'm sure she'd gladly climb up there and get straight into our laps. But what you'll notice is, like, she never even tries to get on the couch because she just never has. And there's no reason for her to get on it. She can get as close to us as she wants to. But when you implement a no furniture rule for a dog where that dog has been on the bed, right? And it's taking a little siesta in the afternoon. And you go in and you need to change the sheets and you ask the dog to get off and the dog is like growling, right? And it doesn't have to be a crazy growl, but the dog like grumbles at you and growls. That dog no longer has rights to that space for me, because that shows me that it thinks that that's its space. And we have to be in control of the spaces, especially with a dog that thinks that it's going to growl, bark, and intimidate someone. That's the number one sign that it thinks it's the leader for sure. Because it's definitely like, no, this is my space. I'm not ready to get up yet. So the number one thing I will tell people is if you have behavioral problems, you control the space, which includes the bed and the couch for sure. And does it mean that you can't invite your dog up there? No, but it does mean that that dog should not be getting up there on its own accord and making that decision by itself.
Yeah. So that's one of the most recent ones that I saw was just a woman who was kind of worried about how this was going to play out, because she had the dog in the bed and was like, all right, let's go. And the dog was like, no, this is my bed. You go.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be a really scary, that can be kind of a scary interaction. Right. So I think that that's kind of an appropriate use of those spaces, right? We have to kind of encourage dogs to share those spaces with us, but in a way that we control. Mm-hmm. All right. So why do some owners confuse boundaries with being mean? And how do you, as a trainer, reframe that for them?
I think most owners, when we initially tell them that they have to say no or implement rules, definitely think that it's some form of punishment or being mean to the dog. But in the long run, it's an act of kindness towards that dog, because you're showing them how to maneuver themselves in the world. Dogs don't know what they don't know, right? Just like kids don't know what they don't know. If you don't teach a kid certain rules and how to live in society and do the things that people think are normal and expected, the dog goes right back to, well, I'm going to do what I want and what I feel is right. And there's no child or dog that I've met that doesn't thrive from having a bedtime routine, a curfew, you know, not being allowed to have sweets before dinner or right before bed. There's no child I know that doesn't thrive in that type of environment, because that's what they need in order to learn how to function and become an adult, just like dogs need to learn how to grow from a puppy into an adult dog and how to handle themselves in society.
Yeah, absolutely. Now that was a good way to put it. So when a client pushes back on those rules, how do you as a trainer show that the dog benefits from that structure without really escalating conflict with the owner?
I think in those instances, I just kind of show them that the dog, I can go back to threshold manners with that, right? There's a lot of the same exercises that you'll hear me talk about when it comes to leadership, that those are such regular, everyday exercises that you should be doing with the dog. And it's not a whole structured thing, but it is, hey, sit before a doorway, right? And those things are going to be so important when it comes down to that, because if I show up for a training session and I say, show me how you take your dog for a walk, and we get to the front door, you open the front door and we're off and the dog's out first, and they're telling us which direction we're going, left, right. Are we going forward? Are we going backward? Are we going inside? Because they didn't even want to go outside. When I look at that and I say, okay, let me show you. Let me show you how I walk outside with my dogs. And I take that dog and they go into a sit. I open the door. They pop up from that sit. I close the door. And we will do that just a couple of times. And you'll watch the dog then go, well, we're not going out the door because I keep standing up and she closes the door. So I'm going to try staying to sit down. You see a dog elongate that sit to where you can open that door, keep the door open. And the dog is looking at you and he's like, are we going out yet? Are we going out yet? And they're waiting then for you to give them that cue. And they're looking to you to tell them that, oh, okay, now we're going out the door. But that's what I always look for when I first tell people to show me how they walk is, how does a dog handle the doorway and how do you handle that dog in the doorway?
Yeah. So the next major point is owners must lead in everyday moments, right? And this is one of my favorite topics because here's some of the nuances that we really need to talk about and everybody really needs to understand because it can influence your relationship with your dog in so, so much. So leadership is built in daily habits. It's not just in training sessions. So, and those who have kids, this is one that I heard recently that I like to relate back to is the people that have kids, they never go, hey, I'm going to run in the backyard here for the next 10 or 15 minutes. I'm going to work with the kid, right? Whatever that is, your son, your daughter, whatever. That would sound very socially unacceptable, but we do it with dogs all the time. I'm going to go work with Scruffy in the backyard. Okay. Well, what about the rest of the time in his whole life?
Yeah. They right? can't all be training sessions that are like structured and we're going to do this and this and this, and then we're done and
right. back and in the kennel. So many people are so focused on how long should a training session be? Should it be 10 minutes? Should it be 15 minutes? Should it be, right? Karen Pryor Academy is a real big proponent of 1 minute sessions, right? They're a very, very successful company and they encourage 1 minute sessions. That can work.
Mm-hmm.
Now your dog can go as long as your dog can go. That's the problem. So
right.
It's like, is that 10 minutes? Is that 12 minutes? Is that 11 and a half minutes? It doesn't matter. The point is you are missing out. If you're only doing training sessions with your dog, that dog is learning all throughout the day.
Mm-hmm.
And you're missing out because that's where shaping, right? Free shaping, or whatever we want to call it, whatever in the dog trainer world we want to this is or is defined as. The concept is your dog is learning throughout the day. And so your interactions with that dog on that daily basis, every time you come in or out of the crate, every time you tell the dog to go to their place, every time you go outside to go potty, those are all opportunities for you to, one, show leadership, and two, enforce and hold accountable your dog for your expectations that you've set in the household.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's super, super important. I think it's missed a lot.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I took a dog out earlier and I was going to go on a walk and we didn't even make it out of the driveway. You were like, how'd that go? And I was like, yeah, we just stayed in the driveway. But that's
such a good example.
That's what
though,
we were doing. It is what it is. I didn't need to walk a half mile. That dog was showing me that he wasn't ready to walk a half mile. That dog was showing me that he wasn't ready to make it outside of the driveway. That dog was barely showing me that he was ready to make it off the front porch, but I gave him some leniency and we moved to the driveway.
Right. And so many people are like, well, I have to walk my dog or I have to do this or do that. I think there might be some other options for you.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever read.
And when that happens, by all means, reach out. I've got a whole bunch of ideas, but
yeah, I mean, I've never Googled it, but I've never read an article that tells me how far a dog should be walking every day.
Right. Not how far.
Yeah.
Now there's a certain level or a certain amount of minutes per,
right.
Moderate, heart rate activity that is recommended, but how far? Not important.
No, never.
Right. Good point. All right. So dogs read. Oh, this one's a good one. So dogs read tone, right? So our posture, our body language is so, so important and way more than words. Dogs don't speak English. So when you are saying sit or down, down's a good one. When you are saying down and you are bending forward at the waist and putting your head just inches away from the dog's face, you're teaching the dog that that body language means something. And in this case, it's that you want them to lay down. A lot of people don't ever test this, but I've seen it firsthand that sometimes when you are really good at that and you've reinforced this a lot, you can say asparagus and lean forward right at the waist and the dog will go down.
Yeah. And you can also stand straight up and say down and that dog is like, huh?
Right. They don't get it. That is a great, great example of your communication is not clear here. You have not communicated clear expectations and the dog is guessing what's expected. Now that is fine right up until it's not. When it's not, now you suddenly start seeing these things coming out and anxiety from your dog that is not clear on what's expected.
Right.
And that's why we're harping on this so much.
And with tone, when I think of tone, my biggest connector there is recall, because when you are calling your dog back to you and you go, Scruffy, come. Nobody's excited. You're not even excited. What's going to make that dog excited to come back
right
to you?
And if they're sniffing a squirrel out or right. or a frog, right? Oh, frogs are awesome.
Yeah.
Right. Hopefully all we deal with a lot of frogs.
So many frogs.
And but frogs are very, very enticing.
Right. Because
they jump and they make erratic extreme movements.
Right, and they try to hide.
And they try to hide and they blend in and they're hard to see. Yeah.
Right. They look like exciting. Rocks, but they don't smell like rocks.
But they're not like rocks, yeah. So we have a lot of issues with frogs. And if a frog that has way more a much more interesting demeanor than you.
Yep.
And you're like, come.
Yeah.
Or here.
Mm-hmm.
Right. What are the odds? What are the odds that your dog's going to come?
Yeah, probably zero.
Probably very low, right? And now you can easily blame the training and be like, well, my dog's not trained well enough. Right. That's fair. But at the same time, whose responsibility is it like to lead that interaction?
Mm-hmm.
It's yours. If you're not exciting, if you're not fun to be around, why is your dog going to want to be around you?
Right. And when it comes down to it, it's like the level of excitement should match the level of situation you're in. And we've talked about this similarly in like e-collar training, right? You dial it up and you're on like a level two and that's inside. And then you step outside, you're no longer on a level two distraction because you've added in all sorts of things. So of course you're going to have to dial that up. And we talk about the same thing when it comes to corrections, right? We're all a fan of making the lightest correction possible for the situation that you're in. But if you're dealing with a dog inside and it's just a tiny correction for them not laying down, great. But when you go outside and you're dealing with reactivity and there's a dog walking by, that's not a simple, we're inside and I'm trying to get you to lay down correction. And I think when I've explained that to some of my clients and related it back to that, it's like, you have to think of all the things that you're adding in. You're not just going from inside to outside with that distraction. You're adding in sights, smells, all sorts of things, noises that are going on. And so you can't expect the dog to focus at the same level outside. One, if you haven't practiced it, and two, if you're not matching the energy of it.
Yeah, 100%. So what we're getting at here is there's a difference between teaching the commands and living leadership day to day. We have to live that leadership example day to day. That's what's going to truly build that relationship with your dog. And silent leadership through movement and posture and tone often communicates a lot more than your individual commands are going to. The dogs don't speak English. They'll go off of all sorts of different cues. So it's really important that we use our body language and our posture and our movement consistently to elicit that understanding in our dog. Mm-hmm. We talked about how everyday leadership examples, like earlier we talked about like structured walks and like controlling doorways, waiting for food. We used all of those examples. So we'll jump ahead of the questions and then we'll get to our listener projects. So Brianna, since you are the only other subject matter expert here today, the question comes to you.
All right.
What small routine change, can an owner make today that will immediately boost the leadership in the home? What would you recommend?
Definitely related to feeding. I think we see a lot of dog owners that don't exactly know, one, dog nutrition, and two, how to feed their dog, right? Everybody has learned that you put the food in a bowl and they either eat it right away or they graze on it as they want to. Every single person I'm quite certain has done that once in their life, if not every day with their dog. And it's not like I didn't come from that place as well. But when you adopt a Hoover vacuum instead of a regular dog and, you know, they're choking on their food, then people are automatically like, oh, I should buy a slow feeder. Yeah, you could buy a slow feeder. You could also feed that dog from your hand. You could scatter that food on the ground. You could put it into a puzzle. There are so many ways other than the slow feeders that people have just adopted as the alternate to slowing their dogs down. It's giving a little bit more stimulation for the dog to have to work at it and tiring them out more, but it's not the same as getting into it with your dog. I play hide and go seek all the time. Like, I recommend that to clients all the time. It's like, take little dishes, put some food in it, hide them around your house. You can walk around with your dog and guide them. It's like, they don't have to be an expert at it and you don't have to tuck it away, you know, under a piece of furniture, but you could walk around with your dog and be like, look, let's find it. Let's search. I was doing that with Dexter yesterday because he kept losing the ball in the yard and I wasn't giving him the answer, but I was like, search, and kind of walking around the yard and giving him hints. Those are the things that people don't automatically think about when it comes to food, but those things are going to be the most important because you're bringing them the food, you're playing with them with the food, you're enticing them to actually want and have a drive for that food rather than looking at a metal bowl and being like, cool, there's that dry kibble again. And I think people lean towards, well, I need to use a food topper, or I need to add this, or I need to do something with that. But a lot of times if you make the dog want it in a more fun, interesting way, then you also unknowingly build that food drive.
Yeah, 100%. How do you coach clients? Let's talk about body language. So how do you coach clients to adjust their body language or their tone so that the dog takes them more seriously without yelling or nagging or like raising our voice? Because one, so it's kind of our position here that that yelling will never increase comprehension with dogs. It will only increase anxiety because the dog is unable to match that type of reaction, right? And so you just increasing the volume, dog can't even respond verbally. So now you've started communicating to them in a language that they don't understand, in a mode that they cannot match, and now you just increase frustration. So we don't recommend yelling or just like raising your voice a whole bunch, but I think there's probably a level that you can still be, you can increase the volume slightly to be more clear rather than whispering to your dog.
Right, and changing the tone has to do a lot with that when it comes to like corrections. And some dogs, we relate it to back to like softer dogs, right? We have soft dogs who are more fearful and more anxiety and just don't require a level that like a working Belgian Malinois. It's like you can tell a Chihuahua probably be like, no, no. And it's fine. A Malinois is going to be like, no, And it's more of like a, hey, you told your kid once not to touch that, and they're still over there touching it. Your tone is going to change. And typically when you get into that whole mom or dad voice and it's like a, hey, I said stop, the kid is like, oh, they were really serious about that one. And I keep snapping my fingers. That's one of the body languages I use all the time. And like, I don't know if that's even related to body language, but I use that cue a lot because it gets a dog's attention, right? That's, it relates back to a clicker. It's like a clicker. It's like, oh, I'm doing something wrong or I'm doing something right. And so a lot of times I'll pair no or a at with a snap and the dog is like, oh, okay. All right. My bad. And it just catches that attention way better than going, nope, stop doing that. No, don't do that. Nope, quit. No, stop.
Right. In English, we have like 100 words that we could use to indicate that you're doing something that we don't like.
And we usually use way too many.
That's the point.
Yeah, it definitely is. And if it's like, don't, no, I usually stick to like 2 or 3 words and then it's, those are my words.
Yeah. All right. So last one so that we can kind of stay on time here and share a story where a simple daily leadership habit created a major improvement in behavior. What was the habit and what changed?
I think a big one for that is going to be like demand barking. So people, when we walk in and their dogs are usually super demandy and things, super pushy, super demanding, super just all around friendly dogs, but they just really are attention seekers. We will walk into that eval and we won't even look at the dog. And that's typically like what we try to do is because we know that that's the fastest way to calm a dog down is to ignore it. When we see an owner and they're like, well, why aren't they jumping on you? Why aren't they over there like nudging your hands? And why aren't they barking at you for attention? And it's like, well, because I'm not looking at it because I'm not acknowledging the dog yet. It's not in a calm mindset. And if you acknowledge that dog when it's not in a calm mindset and it's barking, I think it's one of those things where I go back to the saying, it's like negative attention is still attention. And when a dog is barking and you are telling it no, even, and it's like, nope, stop, nope, stop. Some dogs feed off of that and you're still giving them the attention and energy that they wanted out of you. And when we're like, well, they're demand barking, how do I get it to stop? You ignore it. And I know that that can be one of the hardest things to do, but there are some behaviors in a dog where correcting it verbally is just going to keep the behavior there.
Right, because that's what they were looking for. That's what they're looking for. Engagement.
Right, they don't care that you're saying no or stop or whatever it is that you're saying because they don't know what you're saying and they don't care. But yeah, you're 100%. Talking to them and you're looking at them and you're engaging with them. And a lot of times if it's like, I want to go out the back door, you're letting them out. You're giving them water. You're giving them food. You're giving them something to try to figure out what it is that they want. And that's them guiding you and being like, I need something, figure out what I need. But a dog doesn't need to go out 12 times a day unless they're a little puppy. But we see owners all the time with dogs that are 3, 4, 5 years old. And they're like, well, I let them out every hour. Do they go to the bathroom? No. They just kind of meander around and then they want to come back in.
Right.
Well, that's because they didn't need to go outside. They were bored and they were like, hey, give me something else to do. Let me go outside and find something.
Right. Right. There is a concept of there's a happy medium, right? See, we see clients that they don't have the time to like do the things that they need to do with that dog to like keep that relationship growing and keep it thriving. But then we also see those that it's almost the concept of the helicopter parent, but for dogs, right? Mm-hmm. And they're just, I want them to have everything. I want them to never need anything. And that can also go south. Now, all of these things, don't hear us and be like, oh, got it. So they're just the perfect dog owners. No, we have dogs and we mess this up all the time.
All the time.
We are covering and going over things that are, in our experience, best practice. That doesn't mean that you can't do some of them and be totally fine. Most dog owners on different forums and different, I guess, platforms. Groups and things, platforms. Yeah, that's a good way of saying it. They inevitably agree usually that things like dogs in the bed or dogs in on the couch and things, they're not the source of the problems usually.
Mm-hmm.
They are not a problem at all if you don't have these other issues.
Right.
So the reason why we're coming out super hard on some of these things is because if you have all of those things going on and you have a dog that barks incessantly, or you have a dog that growls at you when you try to take their food away, or you have a dog that fights with the other dog in the house, or you have a dog that, whatever the situation is, if you have a dog that possesses these unwanted behaviors, maybe it points to a bigger issue.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that we get a hold of and start dealing with that bigger issue is we take control back from the house by doing all the things that we've talked about. Yep. So at no point do we just say, oh, well, you just have to control every aspect of your dog's life and you can never let them have any freedom. No, no. You can let them have freedom when they're ready for it. It is exactly like raising a child. You cannot take a toddler or let's use an older child, right? A 10-year-old. You can't take a 10-year-old and be like, yeah, you can drive because they went through a growth spurt and they can reach the pedals, right?
Yeah.
That just because they can do it does not mean that they are mature enough to handle it.
Yeah.
And so there's laws and everything else that's involved. But in general, this is about dog training. So we allow the dogs to have the appropriate amount of freedom for their decision-making capabilities.
Yeah.
That's the end state.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So let's roll into something that I am kind of excited about is the goal of each one of these episodes, right before we open it up for the live like Q&A, for the clients that are dialed into it and listening right now, we're going to talk about two projects. So we're just going to entitle it like listener projects. I've got two ideas. We talked about both of them during the podcast, but I'm going to kind of break them down with performance points. So the first one is the threshold rule. I'm going to encourage anyone who's listening to this, they're tuning in, they're trying to tame the beast that is running around their living room. Each time the dog reaches a doorway, such as like the house or the crate or the car or whatever, I want you to enforce that the dog must pause and wait for a release word before moving. Now, how do you do that? You can do it on a leash. You can do it by holding a collar. You can do it by petting the dog like nicely, keeping them calm. There's many ways you can do it. And there's 1,000 YouTube videos out there on how to do those things. But we're going to kind of breeze through them quickly because obviously I don't have the ability to show you. This is not a video podcast. So start with a leash on. We're going to go for the leash approach. Approach the threshold. You're going to stop, use real calm body blocking to make sure that the dog doesn't bolt out in front of you. You're going to own the space of the doorway. We're going to open the door very slowly. And as the door gets open and the dog continues to sit there, then we're going to release the dog. We use a marker word free if we're using a treat or a reward or something like that. And we will free the dog by saying free, to release them once they have paused and they are neutral. If the dog breaks early, we're going to just calmly reset them and we'll try it again. We'll just tell them no, and we'll reset them, put them right back in that same position, close the door slightly so you're still controlling that space, allow them to relax, and then slowly open it again and start working through it. So this project's going to build respect. It's going to build impulse control. It's going to reinforce the fact that you have to lead that interaction and that transition from inside to outside, or from outside to the car, or from the crate to the living room, whatever it is. All right, project number two, structured meal routine. Before every meal, I want you to ask for a sit or a down or whatever task you want, but ask for a task and require the dog to hold that position while you lower the bowl. And this is, you can modify this any way you want, but we're going to require that. And if the dog breaks the position, just, we don't have to correct the dog. You don't have to do anything. Just lift the bowl, quietly reset the position, and then try it again. All right. This would be another case where I would use the word free to release the dog, because they're being freed to go to a food reward. So I would use free. In our training makeup, you're welcome to use whatever word you want. Make it consistent, but that's all that matters, because dogs don't speak English. Give them the permission to eat with that release, and then over time, this is going to teach them patience and impulse control, and it's going to reinforce your role as both the decision maker and the controller of the resources in the home. All right, so those are your two projects for the week. Until next week. At this point, we are going to open it up for question and answers from the clients that are dialed in here. So if anybody is listening, this is your opportunity to unmute your microphone and throw out some questions about anything we talked about, or if you guys just have questions.
Hey, Ryan, it's Cliff.
Hey, Cliff.
Hey, Chinoa is doing really well. She does have her moments where she is wanting to be stubborn, as bulldogs can be.
No.
She does jump on the furniture and I immediately get her off. Is there anything else that I should be doing to discourage her from getting on the furniture?
So at her age, right, and what is it when she's jumping up on the furniture? Do you not want her on the furniture at all, or you just want her to wait? Just refresh me what your individual rules are.
If we're invite her up, then that's fine.
Okay.
Gotcha. But I don't want her just getting on the furniture and thinking that she can lay on the furniture on her own.
Yep.
Because she always wants to be chewing on something, which is going to cause a stain on the furniture.
Mm-hmm.
And when she was a puppy, she actually peed on the couch.
I got you.
I don't want to inadvertently have an accident on the couch. So I just would like, I'm not a person that wants my pets on the furniture.
Okay.
If, unless they're invited up.
Okay. Gotcha. So, in that case, so typically does she get off if you tell her off?
No. I have to end up going over there and pulling her down.
Okay. All right. So, and she wears a flat collar, right, in the home?
She has the flat. What we've been doing is we have the pond collar. I take it off of her at night when she's sleeping, but then I put it back on her in the morning, and then just so she wears it throughout the morning.
Okay.
Throughout the day. Gotcha.
As there's not necessarily an issue with that, as long as, you know, you're just being cautious with it. So I would just go to, correcting her on the collar, right? If she's wearing that, do you just have her like wear a drag line, or does she usually not wear anything? Do you have like a tab leash?
She is not, but I can put it back on her. I've been lazy about keeping that on her.
Well, so if the behavior is increasing, then I would encourage you to just have the tab leash or the little traffic handle connected there, so that way if this is a behavior that she exhibits like with increasing frequency, you can break it down a little more by just being verbal first, right? Then going and offering her a slight correction and encouraging her to get off of the couch, right? That at that point, we really need to reinforce that the behavior off of the couch is what you want. And so that is where you need to reward her. You need to give her attention. You need to give her affection. Give her the attention, right? Limit the attention that she gets from the interaction of her getting on the couch. Because what you can do is you can strengthen that desire, because if she's just trying to get your attention, she can do things that she knows will make you interact with her. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so what you don't want to do is you don't want to encourage that too much. We want to make her jumping on the couch very dull, bland, and boring. And we want to make her experience on the ground with all four paws on the ground very gratifying.
Right.
And so there's not a magic button to do that, but it's repetition. I will say that it will make it more difficult if she's allowed to get on the couch sometimes and not others, because she's also going through a maturity level of her growing, right? And learning what's allowed and what's not. And so that will blur the lines a little bit. However, I don't think that is inexcusable, right? You can obviously invite her on there. I would also try to reinforce making her get down, rewarding her for being on the ground, and then at the point where maybe you control that space a little bit for just a minute or two, and then you could invite her up, right? So that you're reinforcing the pattern that you are inviting her. And when you invite her, it's fine. But when she takes it, no, that's not allowed.
Right. So start doing those little training sessions with her. Come up with your word for what it is when you invite her up on the couch, whether it's up. We use climb a lot because it's an uncommon word, right? And we really only use it when we're asking them to climb on something, like getting in the car and stuff like that. So I think one of those things that's important is, because she is maturing and she needs to understand the clear difference, is going into some training sessions with her or something throughout the day where it's like, hey, climb, having her get on the couch, and then you don't even have to use a food reward there. I wouldn't when she gets on the couch, but when you do off. And we a lot of times see clients confuse down and off. We use down as a lay down command. We use off to ask the dog to get off of something so that they're not confusing those commands. But having her get off, tossing that food reward onto the ground so that she knows that that's where she gets rewarded. Building that while being on a leash with her so that you can kind of just give her guidance. And I would just use a flat collar for that. But teaching her the up or whatever your word is for that to get on the couch, good. And then you can give her a pet off, feeding her when she jumps off of the couch and just dropping it onto the ground to let her know that that's the highly rewarded location. Getting on the couch, good. We get some pets here. It's okay. But when you get off, you get a food reward or something of higher value. That way she understands the difference and it becomes an exercise that she can be clear on, so that when you're asking from across the room eventually and it's off, she will then get off the couch. Again, you're going to want to reward her for quite some time while she's learning those behaviors. But eventually you get a dog where it's like, hey, off. And you see them go, oh, okay, all right, I'm going to get down.
Right. I gotcha. I do notice through the day that she seems to, when she has the prong collar on versus when she doesn't, she seems to be more aware that she has this on and she seems to be more obedient.
Right. That's, it's that accountability factor, right? So when you switch to an off leash dog with like an e-collar, there's this accountability period where they're like, can they really get me from over here? And if you don't have a long line on and you don't have the e-collar set right, they're like, oh, they don't have me on a leash this time. And that's where you see the dog go, oh, they they lost their accountability and I got away with it. So that's where the prong collar really comes in, especially when you're using it on walks and things like that, where it's like, well, they have accountability to still correct me.
And that's also where that drag line really can come into play, that tab leash, drag line, traffic handle, whatever, because the more times that you drive that pattern in, the more her brain is going to accept that, oh, this is normal. I have to listen because I always have to listen. Mm-hmm. And at that point, once that trigger is like tripped, that's where you finally see that breakthrough, and you don't have to be as active in that.
Right. It turns into muscle memory for the dog.
Right.
Yeah. I made the mistake once of not having her prong collar on for a walk, and it was a hot mess. But every walk that I've taken with her with the prong collar, she has been so good. One day, actually it was just yesterday, we were walking and there was a cat, and Genoa just stopped and sat and watched the cat.
Oh, I love that.
And so she didn't try to make a run for it or bark or anything. She just observed, and I let her sit there and watch the cat for a couple of minutes, and I was like, Chino, come, and she just came with me.
That's awesome.
So she's got her moments. She's not used to the constant, but she's
right. We're working with that consistency, right? You have a puppy, you have a bulldog puppy, with that consistency, she will continue to build that and look to you for that direction, right?
Right. And we did take her out in the public yesterday to our chiropractor, and she did really well in their office.
Awesome.
Yeah,
awesome.
I had her most of the time with me, and people were just asking if they could pet her, and I said, yeah, you could pet her. And then I would make them come to her instead of letting her go to them. And she worked really good with that.
Awesome.
And then she walked perfectly with me, knowing that I'm on my cane. And I can't walk very fast. Right. She stayed right by me.
That's perfect.
And awesome. And then there was a couple of times where we were, people were coming in and out of the chiropractor, and she would literally get up from where she was laying and go to the opposite side of me, because she wasn't comfortable with them coming towards her.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
So I thought that was interesting.
Right. So she's looking to you. Yeah. She's looking to you for that. Right.
Yeah. Giving herself some space.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, she was, I could have asked her to have been any easier for me to take care of in a open environment like that.
Awesome.
Awesome.
Awesome. Nope. I love that. Anybody else have a question for this evening's episode, I guess we call it now?
Hey, Ryan, this is Heidi.
Hey, Heidi.
How you doing?
Doing good.
Do you have any suggestions? We still struggle with Maverick, really doesn't have any food drive. I know we had been feeding him by hand, but we're really not seeing a lot of difference with that.
Sorry, were you trying to talk, Michael?
He just has no desire to eat. He might go all day long and decide to eat a little bit before he goes to bed at 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock.
Is he losing weight?
No.
So then he's eating something. Is he ever like left alone to like be in the backyard? Is he eating anything in the backyard?
Anything he can get a hold of.
But he eventually eats his food. Does he just graze throughout the day?
No, not really. He'll just pick a certain time of the afternoon to go and eat.
But the food is always there and down for him.
Correct.
So that's where we see like a lack of food drive, right? Because a dog knows that it's available all the time and they can just eat it when they want. So when we pick feeding times for our dogs and we limit the access to it until it's feeding time, that's where you kind of see a dog that stops waiting to eat their food, and they will eat it when it's put down because they know, hey, if I don't eat it now, like now's my eating time. I have to eat. So it's just like breakfast and lunch and dinner for humans. We, you know, at school, especially they have a lunch hour, right? If the kids don't eat during lunch hour, lunch is over, we're back in school now. So we do see typically a lot of the time if dogs are allowed to graze and have access to as much food as they want all day, they will like nitpick here and there. And they're like, well, I'll eat a mouthful now. And then later I'll eat one more mouthful. And I don't really want any right now, but maybe later, because they know that it's just there all the time.
Yeah. Okay. So I guess where we're going with this is there's two pieces to the hand feeding puzzle. One is the actual act of hand feeding, but the other part is that the dog shouldn't be able, they should have water available to them all the time, but they shouldn't have food available all the time. And so what that does is, yeah, maybe the first day, maybe he decides, no, I'm not going to eat from your hand right now. Well, that's fine. But then the next feeding time you try again and he's like, no, I'm not going to eat from your hand. And you're like, okay, then tomorrow we'll try again. Now we don't ever recommend that we go like multiple days without making sure that they eat something, but you can make it at least semi uncomfortable for a day or two. The dog is not going to starve. They've got water available to them 24/7. If you're monitoring their weight and they're not eating things like large amounts of things in the yard, then they're getting food somewhere, right? Like, and it sounds like they're getting food from the rest of the day that he's able to just like graze and secure that food when he wants. And so that's the other half of that leadership part, is it needs to come from you rather than him deciding when he gets it.
Mm-hmm. He loves brassicas. He loves broccoli and cauliflower but he'd rather have that than his dog food.
Right. Frozen broccoli is a great treat.
And that's right. That's not even bad, right? And if he likes that, that's great. But we don't really recommend a specific food, or we're not nutrition experts or anything like that on the dog training space. If your vet is on board with the food that you're eating, then we just kind of like give the thumbs up to that. It's totally fine. It's up to you, it's up to the individual owner. But as far as controlling the food, these are the best practices that we've found. And by controlling the food and you giving the food to your dog on your schedule, you will build increased value between, or in your dog's eyes, in you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, should we just set a specific time to feed him?
Yeah, I would say most dogs do just fine with two times a day. Yeah. So if you set a breakfast time and you set a dinner time, and at breakfast time, you offer him food right out of your hand, especially so when we're talking about Maverick is going to embark on his training journey here pretty soon, but he's still trying to figure some things out, right? So I think hand feeding is a great, great thing for you guys to institute to increase your value in his eyes before he goes into his training program. And so breakfast is here. Here's your food. And he either eats it or he doesn't. You give him about 10 minutes to kind of decide. And at that point, then you put the food away. And at dinner time, you do the same thing. We've done this very, very successfully for multiple different clients, all who have told us that their dogs have no food drive, and that has completely turned around for them. We have yet to have this fail.
Yeah, and the dog will typically not choose it the first time, the second time, maybe the third time, but typically by the fourth meal, they're like, I'm really hungry, I'm going to go ahead and eat my food. And right. Then you'll see them gobble it up, and they're like, man, they usually don't eat that food like that. But it's because they know that if they don't eat it, it's going to be gone.
And that doesn't change once they start eating. Like, right. So cool. What you're not doing also is you're not just adding up all the food that they didn't eat so that you make sure that they like get those calories. No, if they skip a meal, they skip a meal. Just give them their next meal at the next mealtime.
Yeah.
They'll catch up. They'll be fine.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Cool.
It's like medication.
You're talking about the animals being on the furniture. Heidi will let Maverick get on the furniture. When I come in here, he sees me, he just jumps down right up
there. Rolling parser.
That right. That sounds like something that you two need to discuss.
He's like, Dad's home, I gotta get off the couch. Right.
I don't know that I can't jump into the middle of that one. That sounds like you might have two sets of rules.
I'll be sitting in the lounge chair and she's on the couch and he'll get on the couch and he'll look at me and I start to get off the chair and he gets halfway off the couch.
Right. He's like,
I get a little bit further off the chair. He's a little bit further off the couch. And I get up, he's off the couch.
He's like, nope, he's going to come over here and make me get down. I'm going to go ahead and get down.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's right. Like he knows you guys' rules and who has different ones there. Smart dogs.
Right. I like it. But this is how it goes. Any additional questions for tonight?
No.
Awesome.
All right. And I'm going to kind of start to close it up here. So thank you for tuning in tonight. Thank you to all of our clients for joining the call. Really appreciate you guys being here, with it being the first episode and such. We definitely are going to make some mistakes along the way here, but I think the goal is to just kind of push dog training in a role or in a way that doesn't just focus on the commands of, and the tricks, the yeah. sit down, stay, come. What we want to do is we want to really focus on the relationship between us and the dogs. I think that that's super important. And hopefully everybody got a chance to learn something tonight. With that, I'm going to say good night. It's been a pleasure, but I appreciate everybody tuning in. So good night from us.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.